everybody. Welcome to episode 14 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I am Kevin Fishbane, joined, of course, as I am every week, by Arthur Arkish. Got our producers on hand, Dan Mott, John Solly, and Nick, the intern. We got another Bears win to talk about. And guess what? We might even talk about the playoffs in this episode. We will, of course, preview Sunday's game against the 49ers with Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. And then we'll talk some more Bears stuff with Peggy Kaczynski of NBC5 Chicago. Don't forget, of course, to subscribe to the ChicagoFootball.com podcast on iTunes. Follow all of our Bears stuff on Twitter at Bears_insider. I am at K Fishbane. Arthur is at Arthur Arkish. Arthur and I spent Thanksgiving together for the second year in a row. It was lovely. It was a entertaining game, of course. And Arthur, the number one thing, so we both got back on Friday, and then typical Friday night of Thanksgiving weekend, I spent some time with some friends that I grew up with in the suburbs, and the number one thing they said to me was, how did the Packers not score a touchdown with four chances from the 8-yard line? And even those of us in the press box, we just kind of expected it to happen, and the Bears defense stood tall. And for me, that was really the biggest takeaway from the entire game, was how they played Rodgers in the second half.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It was just a tremendous effort, particularly as the game wore on. Shut out the Packers, obviously became the first team to do that at Lambeau in a number of years. And it was just a terrific job across the board, but particularly the secondary, obviously, and the way they just didn't really give Aaron Rodgers a chance. Receivers were locked up. Receivers were clearly frustrated in dropping passes. And, they didn't get one hit on Aaron Rodgers in the first game at Soldier Field. Willie Young laid him out pretty good on the first play of the game on Thanksgiving. And I think maybe even sent a little bit of message that this wasn't going to be quite as comfortable or of a stroll as it was the first time around.
But come on, Arthur. I mean, you cover the Packers for USA Today. You kind of thought Rodgers was going to score there, right?
At the end, no doubt. I mean, like you said, they got three chances, whatever it was in the past, in the final 4 minutes, two chances, I guess, obviously the interception and then another shot. And they were moving it pretty good, no question. But the Bears, stiffened particularly inside their own 20. Their standing in the rankings and red zone defense is rising accordingly. And you'd have to think that this was a weight lifted for the guys that had been there a while, a bit of a mental hurdle, cleared. And Vic Fangio, I got to say, has had a lot of success against Aaron Rodgers. So maybe some of this wasn't quite as surprising, when you combine that with some of the Packers' offensive struggles. But I know we were stunned sitting there in the press box, and it was, it was pretty cool to see.
I selfishly was happy I didn't have to do any rewriting because I had my story ready to go and to file, but that's just boring newspaper writer talk that nobody wants to hear. The fun thing for me was that locker room. And, look, I always tell people that it's generally easier to cover a locker room of a team that's won a game because you're going to get people that are more amenable to talk about the game in great detail. That's always what we're trying to get. Now, losing teams maybe have some more interesting and juicier storylines like we saw last year, but one of the funniest things to me, Arthur, was that locker room. So I walk in. First, I can't get past the first aisle of lockers because Zach Miller's got a huge crew around him. Then they had to move Tracy Porter into another part of the locker room so his interview could take place. Chris Pierzynski went through two different scrums of people interviewing him. Mark Mariani was the last one to go to shower because he had so many people interviewing him. And you look around that locker room, and these guys, you just kind of are like, who are these guys that are making these big plays in the biggest Bears win? Probably, I can't even think of the, because 2013, let's remember, they were one play away from winning the division. There was called big wins that year, including a win in Lambeau, but this was monumental. And talk about the guys that were talking in the locker room. It's insane that these guys, that this group of talent has found a way to get to five wins and in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it that way. You could even throw in a Deontay Thompson and a couple other names in there as well. A Bryce Callahan, guys we didn't know who they were mere months ago that were playing such a huge part in the win. And boy, what a contrast between last year and players, you know, phoning it in somewhere around 35 or 42 to nothing, and all the, you know, the rumblings in the press box after the game that maybe that was going to be it that night for Trussman and perhaps even Emery. It was it's just an absolute sea change, and it's a, you know, it's a credit to everyone all the way up to the top and Ryan Pace and frankly even the McCaskey family for getting this thing turned around so quickly. And I know this was a just really a momentous game for the organization, you know, frankly, regardless of what happens the rest of the way, though obviously a win like this certainly raises expectations the rest of the way.
It does, and pressure's on, and we'll talk about this in most of the second half of the show is, you know, how do the Bears handle being a touchdown favorite against 49ers? Now, none of us picked the Bears to win. I will say I picked them to cover. So
there you go.
You know, I was thinking about it. I know there's another Bears podcast that's bragging me because they actually did pick the Bears, but you know, I'm not too concerned about that. One of the things I want to move on from Bears Packers, but one of the things I want to take from the game and talk a little bit NFL in general with you, Arthur, is officiating. There were some terrible calls in that game on both sides. The two that stuck out to me: the illegal contact on Tracy Porter when he picked off a pass. Yep. And the call against the Packers for offensive pass interference when it wasn't even a rub route. I mean, it was just one guy ran a slant, one guy ran an out, and they did, and they called offensive pass interference. These officials, I'll look at it two ways. One, I think there should be full-time officials. And two, I don't think the NFL and Dean Landino do these guys any favors by making these rules so complicated and trying so hard, whether it's, you know, hits to the quarterback, hits to the head, what is a catch, all this stuff. These guys have an impossible job. The NFL makes it more difficult, and they continue to screw up week after week after week. I know we talked about this with Eric at home last week, but Arthur, was kind of magnified on national TV both on Thursday night and then in the Patriots-Broncos game Sunday night. Where are you at with this whole officiating situation?
Well, you know, where I'm at is I'm as disgusted as you are. It's unfortunate that it's actually swaying the outcome of games. And I thought it was pretty funny that we had Eric, a good friend of the podcast, on the show, obviously, last week. And he kind of had a little bit of foreshadowing how he talked about, well, it's even more when it happens in the bigger games, it's a bigger deal. There have been some blown calls. The end of a Ravens game recently, the Ravens already out of the playoff chase, where they weren't talking about it as much. But isn't it funny now that the NFL is pulling Pete Morelli's crew off this big Sunday night game, Colts-Steelers? So I thought that was, you know, pretty good foresight from Edholm. But specifically with regards to the Bears-Packers, if there's any silver lining, at least you might, because I absolutely agree, the Tracy Porter call that nullified the pick early in the game, and then obviously the James Jones offensive pass interference deep in Bears territory that forced the Packers to kick a field goal rather than have a good shot at a touchdown from the 1 yard line, I believe. At least you pointed out one on both sides, you know what I mean? At least it went both ways, but who knows? You know, the NFL wants more offense, so they're trying to crack down on defensive backs. But then you watch the New England game, and Rob Gronkowski is being singled out just because he's bigger and stronger and better than everyone. So the refs' heads are spinning, and like you said, I can't really blame them. If making them go full-time is the answer, you know, perhaps it's part of it, but maybe I'm still a little pessimistic that's going to, you know, solve everything anyway.
Well, Arthur, the NFL does not have enough money to pay referees to be full-time.
Yeah.
I'll have to dip into that $9 billion.
It's the arrogance, though. You have to think it's almost that the NFL just knows how immune, you know, how just how safe they are, even as the product of the game diminishes. Popularity seems, it's an inverse relationship, amazingly. So you have to think there's a little bit of arrogance too, that they just think that nothing can knock them off their pedestal.
The NFL arrogant? No. Of course not.
Yeah.
But no, it's unfortunate. No. As you said, you know, one of the nice things about our job and our role is we're not picking sides out there. We're able to really objectively determine if something is just a bad call. And there were a couple of really bad calls in Denver-Chicago game. Remember, the Bears went from zero penalties for the first time in 20 years to, what did they get, finished with 10 or 12 penalties against the Packers? You know, in 4 days, you suddenly go from a very, you know, a team very conscious of it to suddenly struggling to, you know, keep your discipline. It's beyond me a little bit. And, you know, it's something that's going to be a focus of conversation. As long as the NFL gets bigger, then we're going to focus more on these calls. And, you know, the NFL is going to have to figure out something to do about it. And you mentioned Pete Morelli's crew. Pete Morelli's crew was on the San Francisco 49ers-Arizona Cardinals game last week where they made some screw-ups. And we're going to move on to our preview of Sunday's game against the 49ers in our weekly Behind Enemy Lines segment. Behind Enemy Lines. All right, joining us this week to preview Bears 49ers is 49ers beat writer Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Barrows. That's B-A-R-R-O-W-S. Matt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So I got to start, and I apologize with opening with a bit of a general question, but you've been covering the 49ers for a while now, and the last 12 months, I got to imagine, has been wild for you, from Harbaugh leaving, the Jed York and Trent Baalke stuff, every single player on the defense retires, the coaching search, Tom Sula, Kaepernick. So, Matt, what's it been like to cover the 49ers for the past year?
Well, there's never a day off, and you can be anywhere in the country on vacation, holiday, and have some drama go down, and that's the way it's been this year, certainly, and really for the last 5 or 10 years as well. It's just been one big storyline after another. I take back people back to 2008, when Mike Singletary was the coach of this team, and one day a young running back, Glenn Coffey, just decided that he didn't want to play football anymore, and he retired on the spot. And a couple of days later, another young player had the same idea. So, as odd as this year has been, with the Patrick Willis retirement, with Chris Borland, etc., there was a bit of precedent with the 49ers. So I've seen it all over the past decade or so with the San Francisco 49ers.
Matt, I totally forgot about some of the Glenn Coffey, Mike Singletary stuff. I guess that gets covered up pretty good in what's happened in the dysfunction of late, of course. But being here in Chicago, of course, I know Bears fans are interested. They're starting to worry now about losing Adam Gase because of what he's done with Jay Cutler. Can you clue us in on how close the Bears fans were to never really having Adam Gase or Vic Fangio, and how much the Fangio part of it, what's the truth in all that in the coaching search, taking us back to the offseason quickly?
Well, both of those guys obviously were interviewed for the top job here. In fact, Fangio was the first guy that they interviewed, having been in the building last season. And at one point, after they'd done all of their initial interviews, 9 interviews, the 49ers very much seemed to be zeroing in on Adam Gase, to the point where the GM out here, Trent Baalke, flew to Denver and had a very long meeting with Gase. And, after that, the handwriting seemed to be on the wall. Adam Gase was going to be the new head coach of the 49ers, and it just didn't happen. Less than, 24 hours later, they announced that Jim Tomsula was the head coach, a guy whose name hardly had been coming up, didn't really have a formal interview with the team, but had been here since 2007, so that everybody was very familiar with him. Something happened in that interim, and it may have been just a gut feeling, like, we really know Jim Tomsula, we love Jim Tomsula, we've always suspected that he would make a great head coach, let's hire him as the head man. And then right after that, Jim Tomsula has to start assembling his staff, and guess who his first choice for offensive coordinator is? It's Adam Gase. He goes out to Denver asks, some people have said begged, Gase to be his offensive coordinator, and Gase instead decided to go with the Bears and, a familiar face in John Fox. So that refusal, that turndown, was the first of several for Jim Tomsula. There were several guys that he approached to be his OC, and he finally got to Jeep Christ, who was the quarterback's coach on this team the last few years, and that ended up being the guy. But I don't know the exact number, but there were several other candidates that came before Christ, and here we are with the 49ers struggling in a lot of categories, including offense.
Matt, I want to talk about Vic Fangio with you for a little bit. And we've, from a media perspective, we've loved having Fangio, at least for our weekly interviews with him. They're always entertaining. He, as you know, he says what's on his mind. He just is a straight shooter. And from a coordinator standpoint, of course, what he's done with the Bears defense has been remarkable, at least in the past couple of weeks with the talent there. I know looking at the 49ers, statistically it's been tough this year. Personnel-wise, we talked about the guys they lost, so they don't have the talent that they had when they were so good. But how much of this, you know, how much do they miss Vic Fangio and that impact that he made while he was there?
I mean, I don't think you can conclude anything, but they miss him a lot. I mean, just look at the Bears. I'm struggling to pick out a star on that defense. And yet that group finished 30th overall in defense last year, and it's up to, what, 14th this season? So, it's obviously something is going on there, and you have to conclude that if it's not, you know, if there are no star players, then the coaching has to be very sound. And I would add Ed Donatell to, that theme. I think he had a lot of respect from the defensive backs. Carlos Rogers, for example, came here in 2011 and was really, with not a lot of fanfare. He was a high pick for the Redskins, I think, in the 2000, I forget which draft it was, but he basically didn't live up to expectations there and came here with a little fanfare and became, very good in 2011, led the team in interceptions and was really the captain of that secondary. And he speaks very highly of both Fangio and Donatell and really credits them for, giving his late career a big boost. So I think that they miss him a lot here. I think, even the defensive scheme, Eric Mangini's scheme, which early on had a lot of blitzes, a lot of exotic blitzes, had a lot of, outside linebackers dropping into coverage. As the season's gone on, it's reverted more and more back to the Fangio defense that was here for the last 4 years. So there's even an addition of sorts from the new staff that, maybe the old staff had it right and we shouldn't mix things up quite as much.
It's a great call, Matt, on Donatell and certainly Fangio and the impact they've had here. Obviously, the pass defense, number two in the league now under those guys with really no known quantities for the most part. One more Fangio question. I know we want to talk about the 49ers a little bit too, but everyone, as I said, is talking about Adam Gase as this hot head coaching candidate. As you mentioned, obviously both of them interviewed for the vacancy in San Francisco last offseason. What's your opinion on Fangio as a head coaching candidate? I know he's a little bit older and has been a bit of a lifer as a position coach and a coordinator. Do you think he has those type of ambitions, and do you think he has that in him to be successful?
Well, I know he has those ambitions, and I suspect that he has it in him to be successful. Last year we talked to the 49ers played the Cardinals in the season finale, and it was clear that Jim Harbaugh wasn't going to be the coach, and we were talking to Bruce Arians, the Cardinals coach, on a conference call, and he's very familiar with Vic Fangio, and he brought it up himself. He said that there was a good analogy, a good similarity between him and Fangio, two guys who have been coaching a long time, had never been thought of as a head coaching candidate, but had seen so much and have so much experience under their belts that, maybe that guy, that type of guy, traditionally has been overlooked. Usually teams want the young, energetic, tough talking flavor of the month, but maybe the better candidate is the guy who's been around the block a few times, has lost a lot of games, has won games, knows how to handle a quarterback, et cetera. And you mentioned it earlier, Fangio's frankness. He's an honest guy, and I think players at the end of the day really respect that. And I think he would make a fantastic head coach. I think it would have to be the right team, maybe a more veteran team, because he's not a drill sergeant type, and he doesn't have that, at first, he doesn't have that captivating personality. But I think it's a genuine personality. He's not putting on airs, any sense of that. And like I said, I think that honesty at the end of the day is something that everybody around him, including the players, respects.
There's a few more minutes here with Matt Barrows, covers the 49ers for the Sacramento Bee. Join us to preview Bears 49ers. Let's talk about this 49ers team, Matt. And 3 years ago, I would be asking you about the Colin Kaepernick, Frank Gore, Vernon Davis trio. And today I'm talking about Blaine Gabbert and Sean Drone and Vance McDonald. So a lot's changed. I will tell you from my personal perspective, watching a little bit of Cardinals 49ers, I was impressed with Gabbert. He seemed very calm, moving the pocket, made some nice throws to McDonald. I know they want to give Drone the ball a lot and get moving. You know, maybe specifically just sticking to Gabbert, and we've talked about how this past defense has been pretty good for the Bears. What do you kind of expect in terms of game plan for them and how to attack Chicago, and what have you seen from Blaine Gabbert thrown into this role?
Well, you know, it's Blaine Gabbert was suffering mightily from his reputation in Jacksonville. So when he took over, everybody suspected that an offensive line that had trouble protecting the very athletic Colin Kaepernick was going, you know, that was going to be doubly the problem for Blaine Gabbert. You know, he'd gotten sacked, you know, X amount of times with the Jaguars, you know, just a really high number. And it's been the polar opposite. Gabbert, like you said, has looked very comfortable under center, and he's handled the pressure well. I don't have the number in front of me, but I think he's only been sacked four times in the last three games, which is a very good rate. He's handled pressure well. He's he's thrown the ball away when the situation calls for it. He looks very smooth back there. And you know what a lot of the 49ers writers are trying to figure out is whether that's a factor of having watched Colin Kaepernick for so long. He's so unorthodox. And that unorthodox nature, you know, obviously has allowed him to have success at times, but he doesn't look like a traditional quarterback back there, whereas Blaine Gabbert does. You know, like I said, he's made the right decisions. He throws a very catchable ball, and I think his pass catchers, tight ends, wide receivers appreciate that. And, I think the 49ers' MO and Gabbert's as well is to try to keep the game close, try to minimize mistakes, and be around at the end and come away with an opportune touchdown.
Matt, as a Mizzou grad and former Jaguars reporter, I have to say I have truly been amazed. I think Jeep Christ and the rest of that offensive staff deserves a lot of credit for what they've done with Gabbert. But I know we're wrapping up here. I do want to quickly ask you about the defense as well. Another kind of general question. Why on earth can't they travel well? Because they seem to be a completely different unit away from Levi's Stadium. And who are a few? It seems like just a year ago when everyone was raving about all the really young, exciting kids and the Aaron Lynch and Jimmy Ward and Eric Reed. So who are just a couple of the names to look out for that maybe aren't Navarro Bowman or Ahmad Brooks if he can go Sunday?
Well, you named one of them. Aaron Lynch is probably the best player right now on that defense with Navarro Bowman still coming back from that knee surgery. He's got 6.5 sacks. Just a big, sturdy guy who's, you know, this year, his second year in the league, has really learned how to play that outside linebacker position. So he's one of them. It's a young team. So, I mean, if you're looking for the reason why they're so Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, home versus on the road, I mean, it's stark. They're allowing 15.8 points per game in their home contest and 35.2 away from Levi's Stadium. So it's been a real problem. You know, one of the themes is that, you know, against the Cardinals on Sunday, they didn't have anybody over 28 on that defense. I mean, it's a young defense, especially the line has gone from a line that had Ray McDonald and Justin Smith on it to one that has a bunch of neophytes. So that, to me, has been the biggest difference between the defenses in the past and this year's version, and probably goes the farthest to explaining that stark discrepancy between home and away.
Matt, I'll wrap up with this. I got to ask you about Jim Tomsula, and I think from an out-of-town perspective, because of sites like Deadspin or Twitter, Vines. Tom Sula's been a bit of a caricature, the way he's kind of portrayed in the media. And you're with him, you know, 5 days a week, so you certainly know him, and you know how difficult this job has been for him. I'm kind of curious what your take is on how he's handled everything, because the only thing we hear in Chicago, unless you're paying attention, is you hear kind of the token sound bites from him. We think back to that opening press conference, but what have you seen from him as he's progressed in this job?
He's not great in press conferences, for sure. there have been other ones that have been, you know, almost as bad, quite as bad as that opening day one, but he's a guy that has a hard time finishing a thought and completing a sentence, and so it's certainly frustrating for the media to cover him, because he's hard to quote. There's no sentence that begins and ends with Jim Tom Sula. I will say that, you know, the 49ers players, even at this point when they're 3-8 and the playoffs are certainly out of the question, really like the guy, and they're fighting for the guy. And you hear a veteran like Navarro Bowman say something like, you know, Jim Tom Sula doesn't deserve this type of season. They want to do well for him, but they haven't. And then you have to look and see, you know, what part Jim Tom Sula plays in that. And, the perception that he has had to fight since he was hired is that he's overmatched by the position. This is a guy who's been a defensive line coach throughout his career in the NFL, and frankly, he has not been able to extricate himself from that perception. I mean, that's still the theme. Is this guy overmatched by being a head coach in the NFL? Is this guy the right guy to succeed one of the most successful coaches in 49ers history, in Jim Harbaugh? And so far, it's been a failure. And I don't think there's any other way around that conclusion when a team is 3-8.
Well, I will say the 49ers took Cardinals down to the wire, Matt, and they're coming to Chicago where the Bears are 1-4. So anything can happen, as you know, in this league on Sunday. We will just have to wait and see. Great job. We really appreciate you breaking down the 49ers for us on the show, and we'll see you on Sunday at Soldier Field.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, that was Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Barrows. Arthur, that was just great stuff from Matt, just breaking down why things have gone wrong. Really interesting stuff about Fangio and Gase. My biggest question leading into this week, though, is, you know, we taped this on Tuesday early evening. On Wednesday, we're going to get Jim Tom Sula on a conference call. And the Chicago Beat reporters have a little tradition this year where we have a very warm and jovial greeting when the opposing coach comes on the phone. So, you know, we hear the speakerphone, you know, they'll say, "We have, you know, Coach Tom Sula here for you." We say, "Okay." And then Tom Sula will pick up the phone and say, "Hello." And then we'll all just yell, "Hey, hey, yay, coach. Hey, Jim. Hey, how you doing?" You're like all trying to yell over each other. It's one of my favorite parts of the week. Brings a little levity to the work environment. Some coaches have kind of joked about it. Some don't even respond to it. Arthur, Jim Tom Sula on Wednesday, how do you think he's going to respond?
If ever there was a guy who was going to give us a nice yell right back, maybe, as some gifts have suggested, in his van down by the river, it'd probably be Jim Tom Sula. So I can't wait to hear the excitement in his voice once he hears ours.
Well, I'm already waiting until week 16 when we get Lovey on the phone. Because that's going to be something else when we give Lovey that greeting, because I don't know how often he got that greeting when he was here. Okay, let's race through these matchups here, Arthur. Look in the Bears' run game versus the 49ers' run defense. No, this is not the 49ers' defense of Vic Fangio. We learned that just now from Matt. We've seen it in the numbers, but the Bears have not been able to run the ball well at all in the past 2 weeks. Their last good run game is against the Rams, which was only their second game all season, going for more than 4 yards a pop. I gave the slight edge to San Francisco. You know the Bears are going to try. They're seventh in the league in attempts, but it's been tough sledding for them going forward. It's hard for me to pick them, no matter who they're playing against.
Yeah, I hear you. Although I think this is an opportunity for them to get well for sure. The last two times, Matt mentioned the struggles on the road. Last two times they've left the Bay, they've given up 255 and 197 rushing yards within the division. I really think the Bears should be able to establish the ground game for the first time in several weeks. And I think the real obvious layer of intrigue is who's it going to be? Forte has extra rest now, but anyone who was watching saw Jeremy Langford was the far more explosive player at Lambeau Field.
Actually, I lied. I did pick the Bears in the edge for this one.
You threw me for a twist there. No, that's all
right. I'm glad you knew what I had written because I didn't. By the way, of course, you can read the full analysis and all of our game preview stuff in our Chicago football insert in the Thursday edition of Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwest Herald, a lot of other papers I'm not going to name right now because I don't remember them. Bears passing offense, 49ers pass defense. This might have been the easiest matchup of all, Arthur, to give to the Bears passing game because Jay Cutler just finds a way to get his against anybody.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, obviously no Ed Donatell, none of the starters there from last year. Everyone has left, Culliver and the guy whose name is escaping me. Anyway, the best player that remained in that secondary is Antoine Bethea. He's done for the year. Niners haven't gotten consistent pressure. Alshon Jeffrey, like Forte, should be healthier. And, yeah, I think there's every reason to think that the Bears passing game should get going as well.
Okay, here's where I gave the 49ers a slight edge. It's their running game against the Bears' run defense for the reason I mistakenly said earlier when I meant to say it now, but luckily it's a podcast, so it's okay to make mistakes. The Bears have been bad against the run 2 weeks in a row, one of those against a Denver team that was terrible running the football, so it's hard to put a lot of confidence in the Bears' run defense, even though it's not like Sean Jones done anything. I don't think it's going to really intimidate the Bears' run defense, and the Bears know they have to pick it up, but the 49ers are going to try, and the Broncos and Packers did it pretty darn well.
Yeah, and I totally agree with your assessment here. Until this defensive line, until these inside linebackers kind of, you know, dominate in the front, you're not going to give them an edge anywhere. So Sean John, Bears fans may remember, he was in camp with Chicago last year, kind of a try-hard guy, does everything pretty well. They've been feeding him a ton, 20 touches each of the past 3 weeks. So the ground game is going to revolve around him. And, you know, he runs hard. He doesn't do anything special, but he does have the ability to hurt the Bears if they don't get things shored up quickly.
And last one, 49ers passing game, Bears pass defense. I think the 49ers passing game is on the up and up, just the way Blaine Gabbert's been playing, but it's not explosive, and the Bears pass defense is playing really well right now. My one concern would be Vance McDonald, the tight end. You know, remember when the Bears struggled against Denver's tight ends? That's maybe the one advantage that 49ers could get, but the way Tracy Porter, Kyle Fuller are playing right now, got to give the edge to Chicago.
Yeah, no doubt. Gabbert's been really good. Like I said earlier, I could not be more surprised, but he still has a pick in three straight games. And like you said, Porter, Fuller, those guys are playing so well. The safeties have been playing really sound and limiting the big plays. I will just throw in Torrey Smith and Anquan Boldin. Obviously, these are, you know, NFL caliber receivers, so the corners are going to have to be on their top game, but they should be able to get an edge here.
All right, we're going to head to an interview I had with Peggy Kaczynski, NBC5 Chicago. She covers the Bears. She covers every team in Chicago. She's been doing it for a while. We talked a little Bears 49ers and more Bears stuff because Peggy knows all. She's done this for a while, and she knows a lot about the Bears. So enjoy this interview. And I am, of course, honored right now to be joined on the Chicago Football Bears podcast by the one and only Peggy Kaczynski. Peggy, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Don't be too honored, though. It's not, can't be a high point yet of your career.
No. And I of course, wouldn't talk about how you visited my high school 15 years ago, but we'll leave that for another episode.
Please do.
Peggy did a great feature with Patrick Manley. I'm going to say 15 years ago. I think it might have been shorter. And she came and brought it and presented it at my high school. And then years later, there I am working side by side with her in the press box.
I know. You know, it's like, you know you're old when someone says, "Yeah, you came to my high school and talked to us." I was like, oh my goodness.
Well, you were just
you're the prodigy. You graduated from high school at like 10.
Right. Well, I was gonna save you and say you were just fresh out of college with a great feature to show us that day. But I still remember it. It was very good.
That's awesome.
So, Peggy, a couple weeks ago we had a Denver broadcaster on, and we were joking about John Foxisms, you know, our favorite Foxy line, and his was they get paid too. You know, just always giving the, you know, not talking about how the Bears are bad or anything. Well, they get paid too. Do you have a favorite Foxism after this first year of covering him?
Oh, gosh. I'm so bad at remembering that word for word. But what is it that he always says? Football is a tough game played by tough people or something like that.
Tough, combative game played by 11 men. Combative is a word he loves.
Yes, that's it. It's combative. So, but it just, you know, I tuned out one of his press conferences when we were outside. And I hate to say this because I do like to really listen and kind of go off of, you know, sometimes if you really listen, you can hear something in there that you can take. But I started zoning out one day when he got into all of his cliches and the things he keeps saying over and over. And I looked down at my phone, and instead of tweeting out what he was saying, I clicked on some alert that I got. And all of a sudden, my phone started playing really loud.
Oh, no.
Some ad. And so I was bobbling the phone, and I juggled it, and it fell, and he just kind of looked over at me and, you know, kept going. And then when it was all over, he said, "Yeah, that was pretty funny, Pat. That was good. Better move."
And, of course, nobody on the Bears beat would ever give you grief for something like that.
No, not at all. But I got to tell you, the whole John Fox thing is, it has taken time to get to know him. And although he appears combative and defensive and is that way when the lights are on and he's in this coach mode, I think we've all seen sides of him that are much more down to earth. He's a lot more approachable. And the reality is, Kevin, he's just going to work. And that's the way he looks at it. From the way he grew up, it's all about you go to work, get your job done. He just really doesn't care that much about all the side stuff, you know. So whether it's the media or appearances, you know, you're just not going to get a lot of that from him. And you got to hand it to him. He's getting the job done.
Yeah, and I think Bears fans didn't really care in training camp when we would gripe about some of the media stuff. They don't care about that stuff. And then when they were 0-3, suddenly then they start to read some of the columns and start to get frustrated with him. But now, the way they're playing, I think they are jumping onto that. And I wanted to talk to you about a Bears fan thing that I've noticed lately. Bears fans can't enjoy what's happening because they're already freaking out about Adam Gase leaving and what's going to happen to Jay Cutler and the offense and who's going to take over. Like, they can't even just enjoy Cutler's best season. So I'll ask you, who understands so well how this coach movement stuff works, how do you see this Gase thing playing out? Are you on the side that he's definitely gone and they're going to be stuck? I kind of like, you know, if he leaves, he leaves. John Fox has a history of hiring pretty good assistant coaches, and I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, I do. I think it'll be okay as well. Here's the thing, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that Jay Cutler is going to be sticking around either. So I think that it's just the nature of the beast. And to be honest with you, Adam Gase wasn't expected to be available last year when he was hired. So the fact that they got him and he has put everything into it without looking over his shoulder or looking down the road to the next job, and we have had coaches like that, Dallas Hall, that do that. And the fact that he wasn't doing that and has been so focused on Jay Cutler and this offense, I mean, it's great. But it's not to say that he's not preparing the next coordinator. I mean, who knows? Or, like you said, John Fox could easily bring in a guy that nobody had expected. He's got he is not afraid to bring in name guys who are going to go on to get head coaching jobs. If you really want to make Bears fans panic, both coordinators could be courted at the end of this year. You know, imagine both of them leaving, and then everyone's really going to be in a tizzy. I just think there's a little bit of, it's kind of like with the Cubs, that you want to be a part of the turnaround, you want to be a part of making something happen, and I think that that's the way they're looking at it with the Bears coaches. I think they truly kind of want to be a part of getting things back to the way they used to be with the Bears at Hallis Hall. And I'm talking about 25 years ago. This is what this coaching staff came to do. And they are all solely focused on the job.
And then on the you mentioned Vic Fangio, and we've spent a lot of the show already talking about that defense. What's impressed you most about the way his defense has played, especially on Thanksgiving night?
I'm not sure how he even knows who these guys are.
We don't know who they are half the time.
No! Chris Przinski, you know, someone said, hey, Ski, one of the equipment guys said, hey, Ski. And I was standing next to Chris Przinski, so we both turned around and we started laughing because he's Przinski, I'm Kaczynski.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually didn't want Przinski, he was actually talking to me. But I thought to myself, oh, yeah, Chris Przinski. Now, you know, we're forced to really take note of him. But I'm not sure that Vic Fangio cares that much about what they can or cannot do. He's so busy teaching them what they should be doing. I think he assumes you have a certain level of skill to be at this level on Sundays. And now he's going to fine-tune you, and in that fine-tuning, he might see some limitations what you're capable of doing, but you can't tell me anyone thought that Bryce Callahan or Chris Przinski were capable of the seasons they're having. They're opening some eyes, not because they're great players, but because they're not costing the team huge mistakes at this point. And I think that's what's so impressive is how this coaching staff has really coached and taught these guys into the positions that they're playing. And let's look at the linebackers, guys who have never played the position before, and all of a sudden Lamar Houston and Willie Young are starting to come alive. I'm thoroughly, thoroughly impressed with the teaching that's going on.
So now Vic gets to play his former team and the team that could have hired Adam Gase on Sunday in the San Francisco 49ers, and the Bears are a 7-point favorite. We haven't done our predictions yet. We'll do that at the end of the show, but I know all of us, I'm guessing, are picking the Bears. I haven't seen anybody pick against them. How do you think this – I assume I know your answer, but I'm curious how you think this team handles – being a favorite and having all this confidence and this extra rest heading into what is a must-win game against an inferior team.
Listen, they might be a favorite according to the books, but in that locker room, I don't think that they think they're favorites. There's still plenty of polls that are not giving the Bears any credit. They're not going to give them any credit. I mean, they look at their record. They say, they caught a couple of teams that were struggling. You know, yeah, they played Denver close, but, you know, there wasn't Peyton Manning. And, you know, the Packers had a 3-game skid that they had just come off of when the Bears met them. I don't think it matters that they're favorites. I don't think they're suddenly going to be walking through the locker room with their chest puffed out. I mean, maybe Kyle Long. Maybe Kyle Long will remind everybody, you know. But I think that these guys like the underdog role. I really do. And I think that they will find enough old ways like Lovie used to do. Lovie Smith would, you know, tear out and edit all the analysts that picked against the Bears, and he would get their blood boiling. And I kind of think that this team, they know enough of there isn't a lot of talk about them. They know no one's really taking them that seriously. Yeah, John Fox is doing a nice job at this point, but, you know, 5-win team and maybe a 500 team at the end of the year. I think that that's motivation enough for these guys.
One more question for you, Peggy. And by the way, our listeners should all follow you on Twitter at Peggy Kaczynski. And if they don't know how to spell your last name, then they're just, I don't even want to spell for them because they should know how to spell Peggy Kaczynski at this point. Big picture question about Matt Forte, because you've covered all the Chicago sports teams. You know how this free agency stuff works. And here's Ryan Pace, his first offseason where he's had to make a decision about a former Bear. And he didn't. It was easy with Briggs and Tillman last year. Now he has Forte, who has meant a lot to this franchise. We know even though he's going to be 30, he can still play at a high level. They've got Jeremy Langford. What's your best guess at this point in what they'll do, and how much do you think the fact that Forte's meant a lot to this organization is going to factor in Pace's thinking?
I don't think that they have any kind of sentimentality at all. Honestly, I think that Ryan Pace, there is no connection outside of this year. Seeing what Matt Forte has done this 1 year, and Ryan Pace is looking at the calendar saying he's going to be another year older next year. What are we going to roll the dice that he is going to be the greatest running back in his 30s in NFL history? I just think that Ryan Pace They are cordial enough, professional enough, not to burn bridges, but to part ways amicably. And I do think that they will part ways with him. Depending on what he wants, we don't know exactly, but, you know, Matt Forte has not always, he's not a guy that gives in. He wants to be recognized in the end as one of the top five running backs, and he's going to want to get paid that way. I think that, money could be spent in developing the rest of the team as well. And I think that if your offensive line is good enough, you can have two running backs that are not Matt Forte. I love everything that he has done. I think he's a true professional in the way he carries himself, the way he trains. Everything is, I love it. But I think in a business decision, I just don't see it as being a smart business decision.
Yeah, one fun game you can play with this front office and coaching staff is compare how many guys they've benched or taken out of a starting job compared to the last regime. And I think it's just a certain number compared to zero. So
exactly.
That's the way things have gone. But, you know, it'll be a fun last month this season now that, the Bears are getting to relevancy. And we'll see how things go on Sunday. Paige Kuczynski, NBC 5 Sports Chicago. You can follow her on Twitter at Paige Kuczynski. She's the best of the best. And I really appreciate you joining us today.
Anytime, Kevin. Thank you.
All right, now as we wrap up the show, again, thanks so much to Peg Kuczynski for joining me. I'm joined by our closer, Hub Arkish. Hub, welcome back. We haven't had the you in the closing role in a while.
I was somewhere last week. Quite frankly, I can't remember where. I know I was in Cleveland the other night, and that was a lot of fun. And expected the worst, and it actually worked out pretty well, but it is good to be back here, too.
You were. You got to see the kick six.
It was, I'll tell you, boy, Cleveland sucks. I mean, it's not the city, the team. It's I kind of like Cleveland. I know people complain about it, but that is just a mess there. And it was really kind of interesting working the sidelines on the Westwood broadcast because I spent a lot of time with Johnny Football, and he's just a punk. I mean, even trying to behave, he couldn't behave all that well. And so it was great seeing Austin Davis come off the bench and hit that play. And, you know, one of the things that got lost, we lost it in our broadcast because it got so hectic at the end, is that, you know, Will Hill III is the guy that Travis Benjamin beat for the tying touchdown, and then he picks up the blocked field goal and takes it for the win. So it was a fun game. It was two bad football teams, but it was a fun game.
Earlier in the show, Arthur and I were talking about the state of officiating, and I actually realized it's the second week in a row we've had this discussion, and it's in the forefront again. We talked about the bad calls in Bears-Packers on both sides. Pete Morelli's unit gets taken off the Sunday night game onto a different Sunday game. As I guess that's a punishment. They can't do primetime. Hub, are we at the point, I guess, A, do they need full-time officials? And B, practically speaking, is it ever going to happen?
Well, first, let's talk about the problem in what you just said. They're going to move them from one game to another game.
I know. Yeah.
So two other teams get them if they're bad. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. You know, nothing that the league does these days makes much sense. We have been talking about officiating forever. It's not just this year. It's just gotten noticeably worse this year. I think it did last year. And I think it's absolutely consistent with the new rules they continue to add in the name of player safety, which I totally understand. But what they do is they write these rules so ambiguously that the officials are thinking. They're not reacting. They're thinking. They're trying to figure it out. There's whistles going off that should never be blown. We saw one of those in the Bears-Packer game the other night. And it's just, it's gotten unmanageable. I think that they absolutely should have full-time officials. And then I have a theory I've talked about a little bit on the air and written about, which is I would start an NFL officiating school. I would require anybody who wants to officiate in the NFL to go to that school for a year or two. And I would think the students would be former players who don't make it in the NFL, 24, 25, 26-year-old kids with the athletic ability and skill to run with these athletes who know the game, who could go through a year or two of training, and then I think probably do a much better job than what the guys are doing right now. But in addition to that, they've got to rewrite some of these rules. I mean, you've got to, it isn't that hard to say what's a catch and what is not a catch. It isn't that hard to know where you can hit a guy and where you can't. But the way these rules are written, I just don't think players or officials are always sure.
Yeah, it's going to be an ongoing topic. And you're right, we talk about it every year. And I think there's something to be said about 24/7 media and the Twitter that all these things get highlighted and you put things in slow motion. But that's the way it is. And it certainly needs to get better. Let's wrap things up here with our player to watch in the game. We'll tell you one Bears player, maybe on the radar or under the radar, that we'll be keeping an eye on Sunday against the 49ers. Arthur, you first. Who's the guy you're going to be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Charles Leno. I was feeling a little bad Thursday. He was the one guy kind of outed for a poor performance after the Packers game. I'm curious to see how he responds. He's going to get some combination of Aaron Lynch and maybe Ahmad Brooks, Eli Harold, the rookie speed rusher. I'll be interested to see how Charles Leno responds. Remember, there's a lot of future evaluation going on, not just the final five games at left tackle.
Hub?
You know, I'd like to find a defensive player, but the 49ers offense just doesn't challenge anybody. I hope the defense plays well. I got to look at the offense as well. I got my eyes on Marty Bennett. I think it's been a few weeks off. I think he's had the extra rest now. I think he can be key. Obviously, the 49ers are better on defense than offense. They will do their best to take away Alshon Jeffrey and Jeremy Langford. I think this is where we can see, hopefully, having all three on the field at the same time. I should include Matt Forte, of course, too, that Marty Bennett becomes a focal point for the Bears this week. I think he's going to have a big game.
You know, I wonder if the Bears offense, if this is the week they put it all together. I was going to say Matt Forte, but I'll go on defense. How about Jarvis Jenkins? We haven't heard from him in a long time. 3.5 sacks to start the season. Hasn't done much lately. This defensive line's getting pushed around off the snap. Eddie Goldman included. Goldman made a couple nice plays against Green Bay, but they got to stop the run. They stopped the run and put this on Gabbert's hands. I know Gabbert's played well. They should come out as victors. And speaking of, it's time for our weekly Around the Table picks. We got six people making their picks today. Let's start with our executive producer, Dan Mott.
Guys, I'm going San Francisco 14, Bears 10, and that's only because, and Bears fans will like this, because every time I pick the Bears to lose, they win. So I'm picking them to
taking a bullet for the team. Yeah. How do you like that?
All right, let's go, Nick the intern. You're up next.
This is pretty easy, I think. Bears, lot too little.
All right, Bears, lot too little. Remember, he doesn't like scores, Nick the intern. Our associate producer, John Solly.
I'm going to stick with what I said on the fantasy podcast, basically, that you can fire up all your Bears. I think you add in the narrative of Adam Gase, probably wanting to pour it on San Francisco. You might not say that this week, but I think the Bears actually put up a 40-burger. I'm going 41-17 Bears.
Wow, a lot of points for John Sally's Bears there. And Matt Barrows gave us great stuff about how close Gase was to getting that job. All right, Arthur, what's your pick for Sunday?
Yeah, I haven't been right often this season. I feel pretty good, though, about my Bears prediction, although I think in the insert I wrote 24-16. I'm starting to feel now like the Niners are going to have a hard time reaching 10 points. This should be a pretty convincing victory for Chicago.
All right, our closer, Habarkish.
You know, guys, Adam Gase was not the only candidate for that Niners job. Vic Fangio was, too. Vic Fangio was Jim Tomsula's boss. Mm-hmm. So I think he has a little idea of what's going on out there. If ever there was a recipe for the Bears to play their best game of the season, it's this Sunday. I've got it Bears 30, 49ers 16.
A lot of field goals in this one. You got two of the worst red zone offenses in the league. However, the Bears, seventh in the league in red zone defense, fourth in goal-to-go defense. I got Bears 23, 49ers 12. That'll do it for episode 14 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. Don't forget, for all of the best Bears news and analysis, visit us at ChicagoFootball.com. Follow us on Twitter at Bears_Insider. And go ahead and subscribe on iTunes. Maybe give us a rating if it's 5 stars only. It's the only ratings we accept there. And that way you will never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. The Silverado is ready when you are. Get a head start on the new year with special offers and check out all of the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today. And you can drive what Dan Hampton drives. All right, big thanks to go around. We got our producers, Nick the intern, executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Solly, our closer, Hub Arkish. Our guests were Matt Barrows and Peggy Kaczynski, my partner in crime, co-host Arthur Arkish. And for all of us at ChicagoFootball.com, have a wonderful week. We will catch up with you next week and recap Bears 49ers.